Are you sure?
Here's the 30-second lesson on what legends know. Never ask a bride why she's getting married. Don't wear a skirt on a windy day. Deodorant is not a shower. Don't sniff chili flakes. And don't forget, saving is not investing. Legends don't just save, they invest in mutual funds. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
How much should we care about a state called Tripura? Tripura, which is India's most faraway state. Now, faraway is a judgmental thing or a loaded thing, because what we do is we locate ourselves mentally in New Delhi and we presume that this is the center of India, this is the heart of India. It's a presumption, loaded presumption, but that's how it is. And then we measure distance from there. So if you measure distance from Delhi, the farthest point on the east on the map of India, see where Tripura is located. That is where Tripura is, sharing its borders on the eastern side with Assam and Mizoram and all along the rest of the border with Bangladesh. So this is really one of our small states with the largest border with Bangladesh. Once again, how important is it for the rest of the country? First of all, every part of India is important, equally important for the rest of the country. If you see a human body, can you say, oh, this finger is maybe not so important, or maybe the smallest toe in my foot is not so important, it doesn't perform much function, so I can get rid of it, or if I lose it, I don't care. Does it happen like that? It doesn't happen like that. Tripura, however, is not just that. Tripura, one, is a tribute and a challenge. It's been a challenge for India's diversity. It's also a tribute to India's diversity because it has 19 tribal communities. 19 tribal communities who've been rendered a really distant minority in their own state. It's a state where they used to be a majority before independence. Over time, they've become a minority and then a small minority of between 25% to 30%. Again, when we have a fresh census, we will know the exact numbers. The large majority is Bengali speaking. They did not have peaceful coexistence for a long time, but now they do have peaceful coexistence. So it was a challenge to India's diversity. It's also a tribute to how India learns to deal with its diversity. It's also a state which has recovered from a really crippling and violent insurgency, which led to massacres, mass killings. It has gotten over that. It has also got rid of its Disturbed Areas Act imposition, and now all of the state is free of Disturbed Areas Act or Armed Forces Special Powers Act. Again, an Indian success story. Of course, the news peg for why we are talking about Tripura today, that is obvious, because elections are coming up. Tripura might just contribute 2 seats to Lok Sabha, but the fact is that BJP takes every seat deadly seriously, as if it's majority dependent on that. A bunch of Tripura votes. BJP has been dominant there. They won power in Tripura in the assembly. But the tribal votes by and large, which is anything between 25% to 30%, the tribal vote by and large goes to another political force. That is Tripura Mota. And I will tell you about that as we go ahead. Mota means consensus. Tripura itself stands for Tripuraha Indigenous Progressive Regional Alliance. So Tripuraha Indigenous Progressive Regional Alliance, Tripura Mota, and their consensus. So that party and the BJP, because this party commands the tribal vote. BJP wants that vote. BJP doesn't want to be challenged for that vote, nor does the BJP want this party to align with either the CPM or Congress, or with the CPM Congress combined, whereby it transfers its vote. This party has a transferable vote. That can imperil at least one of the two constituencies for BJP, and they don't want to take that chance. So they have signed an agreement about a week back, whereby Tripura and the BJP have now come together and they will fight the election together. So the news peg we know. But once again, why talk so much? Why dedicate a full episode of CTC Karta Clutter to a state called Tripura? Now I know my own understanding and commitment, and now you can always say, Shekhar Gupta, it's nothing but your own romanticism with the Northeast. Maybe there's a little bit of that. I did cover that region. I was in Tripura 1981, 82, 83. Those were very tough times in the state. And later also in the elections and other periods, That might be a part of it, but nostalgia is not what determines how important a part of the country is. Once again, look at the map of Tripura. If you see the map of Tripura, I will take you to one of the southernmost points on the map of Tripura, in a tiny place called Sabroom. Sabroom is on the banks of the Feni River. Now, if you ever read any literature on the 1971 war, or any books on the 1971 war, you will see a lot of action having taken place across the Feni River, because Feni River forms a border between India and what used to be East Pakistan then and Bangladesh now. Over Feni River in 2021, our Prime Minister and Sheikh Hasina Wazid, his Bangladesh counterpart, they inaugurated something called Maitri Setu. Maitri Setu, Setu as you know is bridge, Maitri is friendship. Maitri Setu is a small 1.9 kilometer bridge that goes over. It's Feni River is not a wide river. I've been there. It's not a wide river. It's like it's narrower than some of these Satluj canals, for example, in Punjab or say Rajasthan canal. It's narrower than all of those. It's quite narrow, but it always has water and quite a bit of water. Now, across this bridge has been built 1.9 kilometers, starting from Sabroom on the Indian side and going to Ramnagar on the Bangladesh side. Ramnagar is just a stop. From Ramnagar, it connects to the highway, the Bangladesh highway, which takes it straight to the Chittagong port. That is only 80 kilometers away. What this does is, this is a critical element in India's Look East policy, because this connects this part of Northeast India, one, to Chittagong, so they get port access for goods coming, goods going out. Second, through Chittagong, a new route opens up to Kolkata, and that is only 450 kilometers. Otherwise, if you did it the old-fashioned way, the way it's been done so far, historically since 1947, or definitely after 1965, because after all the other connections with East Pakistan broke up, you will go into Assam, into the east and through Brahmaputra Valley and then down to Siliguri corridor, and then you go round and round and round, and it will be about 16 to 700 kilometers to Kolkata. So connectivity of the northeast, Tripura is very critical to that. Now you might also say that things are happening through Mizoram as well. There is however a difference. Mizoram also has connectivity projects, as would Manipur with Myanmar, for example, Mizoram also with Myanmar. The important thing, however, is that in case of Tripura, the land is flat or more or less flat. So connectivity is that much easier. Mizoram, Manipur, mountains add to challenges. And in Assam itself, the very wide span of Brahmaputra River, particularly as it comes down to the west in Gwalpada, Dhubri region, that creates connectivity challenges. So that's why, that's one of the reasons Tripura has now become critically important, and a lot of the Look East activity has taken place from Tripura. Now, first of all, what exactly has happened in Tripura, that we have to understand. I told you there was this agreement between Tripura Motha and BJP. Tripura Motha is headed by Pradyot Manike Dev Verma, the notional or titular ruler of the state of Tripura. We know the titles were abolished, but he's still seen as the Maharaja. Everybody refers to him as the Maharaja, as much as people might refer to Jyotiraditya Sindhya as the Maharaja in Gwalior. And I know that royal family. I used to know his parents. I've been to the palace many times, those days riding a rickshaw, a manual rickshaw, because that is the only transport that was available in Agartala. And it was quite interesting that the main road leading from the city into the palace also allowed access or entry to the rickshaws. That said, the fact is that now Pradyot has risen to be a leader in his own right. In February 2019, because his parents had a strong Congress connection, his mother also was a Congress MP, he became the head of the Congress, the Pradesh Congress Committee chief in Feb 2019. But soon enough he broke up. He broke up quite unhappily. So in fact, if you look at the offspring of the former leaders who've left the Congress, right now we are looking at the son of A.K. Antony or the daughter of K. Karunakaran or the son of Jitendra Prasada, etc., or the son of C.P.N. Singh. The fact is that he was one of the earlier significant sons of former leaders who left the Congress party. 2019 he left, but he did not go to the BJP. In fact, he's never joined the BJP. He set up his own party. The ruler in Tripura, the ruling family, is considered a tribal family. And they represent the tribals. The tribals see them traditionally as their leader. That's because, and that is something we have to understand very carefully, Tripura was always a tribal state. Try and understand the demographics. In the Northeast, a lot of the politics that happens today and a lot of the bloodshed that's happened in the past, in the fairly recent past, in our lifetimes, it's all owed to demographics. So to understand Tripura's demographics, I will give you some basic figures. In 1941, 60% of Tripura's population was tribal. It was a very small population. It was maybe 3 lakh people. 60% of the population was tribal in 1941. In 1948, that's the year after independence, 48%. The tribal population from 60% came down to 48%. Now, I will also give you some idea of how many refugees from East Pakistan came in, because those are registered refugees and numbers are available to us. But because the base was very small, suddenly from 60%, tribals became 48%. So they became a minority, but still notionally a minority, because 48% does not look like such a small number. So 48%. Then by 1971, they had become 30%. At this point, it looks like they might be just about 25 to 26%. The other important thing is these tribal communities, there are 19 tribes. They are not spread all over the state. You will find some of them all over the state, but most of them are concentrated in some districts, particularly in the eastern parts, some districts of Tripura. And many districts of Tripura have tribal majorities. Those are the districts which now constitute an autonomous constitutional entity within the tiny state of Tripura. That is the Tripura Tribal Autonomous Areas District Council. That council was achieved after a great deal of agitation, protests, and insurgency and terrorism in the past. That was settled, and I will give you some history as we go along. That was settled because the tribal demand for a separate sovereign country was settled, as it's been settled in all other parts of the Northeast, by giving them an autonomous area where they could have some of their own laws, they could protect their own customs, and they could also see some self-rule through elected bodies. That's precisely what's happened, for example, the most recent example with the Bodo agitation in Assam as well. So something like that happened in Tripura as well. So that force is represented by Tripura. So Tripura, because they have domination over the tribal vote, the BJP saw value in signing up with them, and BJP then signed up with them. Now, I know you're curious about how did these numbers came up, these demographics. These demographics changed in the state, and in fact, it was the demographic change in Tripura. So understand, the roots of major problems in much bigger states actually lie sometimes in much smaller states. So it was the experience of Tripura where indigenous communities became such a minority that then enraged people in Brahmaputra Valley in Assam, because they started saying that what happened in Tripura will happen to us also, because Bengali speaking people have been coming from Bangladesh or East Pakistan into our state as well, and soon enough we will also become a minority as the tribals became a minority in Tripura. And that is how, that was one of the sparks for the Assam movement that started in 1979-80. Again, to understand this, I know it's complicated, but because sometimes things are complicated, we have cut the clutter. And that's the reason I find it so interesting, because it makes me read up a lot more. It makes me go back to whatever knowledge I might have and to refresh it and then try and decipher it in simpler terms for you. By 1979 in Tripura, quite a bit of anger had begun to build up among the tribal communities, and some clashes had begun to take place between the tribals and the Bengali speaking people as well. Bengali speaking people at this point were being organized by the left parties. Left parties have always been strong in the tribal community, but the tribals so far, who did not have leadership of their own, acquired a leadership, and that leadership came in the form of an organization called TUJS. So in 1977, TUJS came up or became prominent and also found itself a leader. That leader was Bijoy Rangkhal, and that name will keep coming back as we talk now. TUJS stands for Tripura Upajati, that's tribal or native people, indigenous people, Tripura Upajati Juba Samiti. Juba, as you know, is youth. So TUJS came up. Its organizing secretary was a young man called Bijoy Rangkhal. Some clashes took place between TUJS and left leaders, particularly after 1977, when the left won a big victory and came to power in Tripura. Remember, Tripura joined the Indian Union when the Maharani signed the instrument of accession in 1949. It became a part C state of the Indian Union. It's only in 1972 that it became a full-fledged state. So the second government in Tripura, 1977, Left Front got power. And that's when TUJS got more active, and that is what gave impetus to TUJS or some cadres of TUJS to arm themselves and form something called Tripura National Volunteers or TNV. TNV it is, which was then implicated on one of the biggest massacres in India's history. One of the biggest massacres of its kind in India's history when on 8th of June 1980 in a village called Mandai, which is no more than 30 kilometers northeast of Agartala. A large number of Bengali houses, in fact, thousands of Bengali houses were burnt, properties were destroyed, and according to government figures, about 350 people were massacred. Now, government figures said 350 people. If you see some of the international press, they say maybe 450, 500 people. But if you ask the Bengali community of India, and remember, this is not Hindu Muslim, this is almost entirely the Hindu Bengali community of Tripura, they will say, no, there were more than 1,000. So many bodies were not found. This area is very remote. This area was very remote and poorly connected at that point. But the fact is that a big massacre took place in Mandai. If you search Mandai massacre, you will know what happened. Remember, within 3 years of the Mandai massacre, in a very similar pattern, in a very similar modus operandi also, another big massacre took place in the northeast. That was the Nelli massacre. That was just 3 years after the Mandai massacre. Once again, it was the indigenous people or a group of indigenous people, in both cases, tribal people, setting upon Bengali settlements and killing a lot of Bengali people. The difference being that in the case of Tripura, Mandai, it was the Bengali Hindus. In the case of Assam, it was the Bengali-speaking Muslim. That's why I bring to you this slightly involved story. So we understand that the seeds of much bigger problems lie in smaller ones. Or maybe there are always warnings that come up from some part of the country through some incident which, if they are left ignored, lead to bigger trouble. So ethnic trouble started blowing up in the Northeast in the late 70s. It's then built up in early 80s. If it had been attended to in late 70s, maybe it would not have come to a head as it did in early 80s, with five insurgencies raging all at the same time, which also happens to be the period that I served in the Northeast, 1981 to 1983. Since then, Tripura has gone through a very rocky road. Very rocky road because it had a very disturbed situation. It had Armed Forces Special Powers Act. There were operations every now and then. There were ambushes, the usual Northeastern thing. And in the Northeast, if anybody wanted to set up an armed rebellion at that point, it wasn't difficult to get weapons at all, because you could get weapons from Bangladesh. Military dictators were ruling Bangladesh, who were more inclined towards Pakistan than towards India. Also, access to Burma was available. Many of these insurgents, including Bijoy Rangkhal, found refuge in Bangladesh. However, in the course of time, things began to stabilize. By 1983, Bijoy Rangkhal wrote a letter to Indira Gandhi, and that letter was seen as a first overture from the insurgent leadership to Government of India. And he said, we had to do all this to draw your attention. I'm not reading from the letter right now. I'm just giving you a summary. We had to do all this to draw your attention. Now, what you need to do is to throw all the foreign infiltrators out of our land, and once you do this and restore the land to its indigenous people, we will have no problem. Now, this letter was written, but peace didn't happen then. Peace still had to wait, because while the left was in power, the Congress government in Delhi was very impatient. And then something very curious happened in Tripura, and for that something I still haven't found an answer, and I have my suspicions, but I can't base anything on suspicions, although I have mentioned it in a couple of national interest articles, and those were national interest articles about what is called black operations, when intelligence agencies carry out operations for whatever purpose without telling anybody. So one of those events was in 1988, February 2, 1988, there were overnight massacres in large parts of Tripura. Large parts of Tripura where once again Bengalis were killed. More than 100 Bengalis were killed. Now in 1988, after the history of Nelli in nearby Assam, after the history of Mandai in 1980 in Tripura with the presence of so many armed forces, this kind of massacres taking place over a large part of Tripura, that created an immediate scare. Remember, this happened in the midst of an election campaign. And as these massacres took place, Rajiv Gandhi's government in Delhi immediately decided to send in the army to restore control. Sounds familiar? Isn't it the same playbook that the Modi government also plays from in many states, including, for example, in West Bengal? So the army went in, and the majority population, which is the Bengali population, they said, thank God, Rajiv Gandhi has sent the army. And that election elected Congress Party to power. What I'm trying to tell you is that deadly political games are played in sensitive states as well, and Tripura was one of these. Now that said, in 1988, the same year after the Congress came into power, within months, a peace accord was signed between Bijoy Rangkhal, the head of Tripura National Volunteers, and the state government, backed by the central government. State government, the chief minister then was a Congress Party chief minister. That Bijoy Rangkhal, the former insurgent, the leader of TNV, who was considered as a mass killer of Bengali Hindus in the state, that Bijoy Rangkhal is today, he joined the mainstream of politics. He got, as part of his peace settlement, reservation of 20 seats in the state assembly for tribals. And that went up in the course of time. He also got power in his autonomous district. An autonomous district was set up. He got power there in the course of time. His party went through many splits, counter splits. If I start telling you all of that, it would look like I'm giving you some organic chemistry lesson, saying this one and these five break from this and these two then add up and become this. So let's not go there. He is today the head of Tripura Mortha. That is the important thing, because his party merged with Pradyut Dev Barma's part. Now, a couple more things before I let you go. I had mentioned earlier on to you that we will give you figures of refugee arrivals so we can understand the changing demographics of Tripura better. So when we go back to 1951, between 1941 and 51, Tripura's population increased. 1941 was just 5,13,000. These are all census figures. Population went up to 6,39,000, so not that much. Between 51 and 61, see how the population goes up. It goes up by 78.7% in one decade. So from 6,39,000, it goes to 11,42,000. Why? Because in 2 years then, serious riots take place in what was then East Pakistan. So 1950, 67,000, 151 refugees come in. These are almost all Bengali Hindus, Bengali speaking Hindus. 1951, riots get worse. 1,84,000 Bengali Hindus come in as refugees. 1952, riots get even worse in East Pakistan. 2,33,000 Bengali Hindus come in. And then 1953, 80,000 come in. And then situation stabilizes, because that's when these accords between Nehru, Liaquat Ali, etc. take place. Except for one year in the middle, which was an exception, that was 1964-65. That's when the 65 war took place, and one more round of migration of Hindus from Pakistan took place. In that year, another 1,340,000 Bengali refugees were registered as having come into Tripura. So that is how Tripura's demographic balance kept on changing. Then you see the census figures 1971 to 81, the difference is 31.9%. Sorry. Then you see the census figures between 1961 and 71, growth is 36%, way above normal. Next decade, 71 to 81, 31.9%, way above normal. And then 81 to 91, 34.3%, again way above normal. That means more people were still coming in. After that, things calmed down. It does look like things calmed down because of two reasons. One, because awareness grew on the Indian side and these tribal insurgencies and tribal protests took place, indigenous protests took place. And second, because the politics of Bangladesh also changed. And then these riots calmed down in East Pakistan. Then it continues on like this till 1971. 1971, Bangladesh war, once again there are excesses against Hindus. So a lot of Bengali Hindus again come into Tripura. Those Hindus have also got naturalized. So 1971, I told you in the census, the percentage of tribals was 30%, but this obviously changed substantially after that. So 91 onwards, every decade, the decadal growth rate in Tripura has been following the normal of the rest of the country. In fact, if anything, it's a little bit less than the normal in the rest of the country. Tripura is also a remarkable state. In the 2011 census, it reported a literacy rate of 87.7%. Just think about that. Such a distant, backward, poor state. If 2011, it was 88%, you can now presume that it's almost a 100% literate state. So once again, we don't need any particular or special reason to learn more about any part of our country. Every part of our country is every bit as fascinating as any other. Tripura, however, because we know so little about it and we think so little about it, is something that I thought I will talk to you about in some detail today.